William Freeman to be the United States Postal Service. Ms. Martin?
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Robin March from the law firm Lambert Coffin. Issue before the court is relatively simple. In reducing fees, the fees of the case under appeal, did the board comply with the standard this court established in Crumbaker v. Merit Systems Protection Board for fee reductions, or did it err as a matter of law in failing to meet the standard? In Crumbaker, this court established, firmly established, the standard that when the board eliminates hours of service in a fee, in an adequately documented fee petition, it must identify those hours it's eliminating and articulate the reasons for the elimination, and it must articulate the elimination in more than a conclusory fashion.
But the question then is how much more? And the fee request here was 45 pages. I mean, it was a lengthy.
Correct, Your Honor.
What is your view on what would have been enough? I mean, does the case law require that the AJ go through every line item, every page? I mean, what is enough? What is the degree of specificity that would have been sufficient?
It has to do so according to Crumbaker in the standard established in a clear manner, in a reasonable manner, even if it's a concise manner. It can't do so in a conclusory manner by simply stating, as this judge did, that the fees are excessive or the fees.
Well, he wasn't. He said, for example, looking at the respondent's appendix, and this is in the red brief 22, which is your pre-hearing submission, trial judge said 50 hours is too much for that.
Well, I think
16 pages, 50, and that's over a week to produce this document, especially when there wasn't much new in the document that hadn't been generated earlier.
I think in the fee, in his section on the petition for review, that the judge came very close, if not meeting, I think his explanation.
On the petition for review, this is in your pre-hearing submission. This is the piece of paper you gave before you had your one-day hearing.
Well,
and according to the record I read below, it said you charged nearly 50 hours to produce this 16-page piece of paper. And the judge said the government said this is, from their point of view, grossly excessive. The amount of time in the pre-hearing submission, two or three other categories.
Well, the only hours that the judge specified.
I understand those are the hours he specified, but I mean,
14.5.
somebody went back through and fished out some hours to get this 50 figure. The government said there were 50 hours connected with the pre-hearing submission. I didn't see you in the reply.
I believe that was the agency counsel, Your Honor.
I didn't see you disagree with that in your reply.
Well, the agency counsel specified those hours. The judge, in his decision on the fee petition, only on the section, on the first section, which dealt with the period of time from February 2003 through September 2003, the only hours he specified were 14.5, which were 10 hours.
You know, I understand he took some specific hours out as being duplicates. You had too many people working on it, or some issue like bankruptcy, something's irrelevant.
Correct. And then
when he does his percentage whack down, he's saying, look, I'm looking at the amount of chunks of time associated with these various categories, the time periods in the lawsuit. He says, this seems to me to be too much. I take your argument to be that a judge, district court judge or an AJ, may never use a percentage mark pay.
No, Your Honor.
And in what circumstances may a judge use a percentage mark pay?
The case law establishes that a judge can use a percentage markdown in the limited circumstances where either the document, the fee documentation is either inadequate, it's either vague, undecipherable, or where the Crumbaker case infers it could be used, or Norcross where the litigation is voluminous.
Not enough to have a fact finding by a trier of fact. That the hours are grossly excessive, particularly the hours involving discovery, preparation of the pre-hearing submission, and preparation for the hearing. Those are three distinct categories in which there was a fact finding that the request, the hours claimed, were grossly excessive.
And he has the discretion.
So what's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to go through, and you look at your time charts, real hard to tell where the discovery is?
He has the discretion to come to that conclusion, but under Crumbaker, he can't, under Crumbaker, simply stating that time is excessive, is arbitrary, capricious, and an error of law. He then has to identify the hours and make more of an explanation in terms of which hours. Is it the hours we're deposing five of the agency representatives? Is it the hours that...
So you are suggesting, I mean, the judge decided, it seems perfectly reasonable, he divided this case, the fees, into chunks, different stages of litigation. You seem to be suggesting that the case law requires that that's not specific enough, that he has to take every line item, and analyze 4 hours for deposing Mr. X, 5 hours for deposing Ms. Y. Is that your view of what he's required to do? He has to go through each line item?
I mean, simply cutting it into, I mean, simply categorizing the time periods is really, that's not identifying the hours. It's no different from saying the fee petition goes from February 7th through X date. That's not identifying the hours. Crumbaker expressly states that simply stating fee petition is excessive is inadequate. I understand the temptation to say this is excessive, this is tedious business.
My question is he required under the case law to go through every line item to say 4 hours were spent on this deposition, I think it only should have taken 2 hours, next.
Well, Crumbaker expressly states that, and board precedent preceding Crumbaker states that the judge has to identify hours. Yes, that's this court's standard and has not been overruled. So the two-part standard is not my standard. It's this court's standard. The two-part standard is they have to identify the hours so that the court can then evaluate, is their determination supported by substantial evidence?
What would it be sufficient?
The court did identify discovery as a particular problem, and there are several hours listed in your bills that deal with discovery. So why wasn't the judge focusing on those hours when he concluded that there were far too many hours spent in discovery? How would he have been able to say that unless he had some clue as to how many hours were spent in discovery?
He doesn't identify.
He has to identify the specific hour?
You have the discretion to change the standard, but the standard as it stands now is Crumbaker.
And can I ask a question, Mr. Bob? There's a shortfall here. Your total bill was $250,000, something like that?
Well, for what's at issue here is about $140-something.
So the shortfall, the difference between
the approved 61.
That difference, right. So if, heaven forbid, from your point of view, if we were to affirm, is Mr. Freeman still on the hook?
He is not on the hook.
Excuse me?
He is not on the hook. And what is at issue here, it's not our firm, simply our money. The larger public policy purpose here is access to counsel for federal employees who are subject to unwarranted removal from their employment. In this particular case...
Let me ask you this question. Yeah. As Judge Gross was sort of getting at, well, you know, who's supposed to do the nitty-gritty? I suppose if I had been Judge Garrity, I could have said to you, well, look, I'd like to get at the bottom of this. I want to be fair. Let's start off with the first bill, this half an hour here, initial meeting with Bill. What happened?
We met with...
Now, I can say it didn't really take a half hour, but I'd like to know, you know, you need... So I would go through each one of the charges and ask you pointedly, what did you do? Who was in the room? Was it duplicate? And then I would be able to, at the end of the day, say which ones I'm going to take in and take out. That, you said that would satisfy Kernbaker, no question about it, right?
Absolutely. Practically speaking, I think...
I mean, how, for example, in your brief, you complained, well, gee, there were some really valuable hours before the agency ever really filed its formal complaint, and we were in there trying to talk them out of doing it, which would be
and
very prudent.
That's crucial.
How's the judge supposed to know? Which, why didn't you tell him?
He had the right... He did. That's one reason...
You told him where?
Well, that's one reason...
Where did you tell the judge through these bills? Which of these... Suspect hours were especially valuable in trying to head the case off at the bench.
That was one reason why so much time was spent on the fee petition, and those letters were attached to the fee petition.
If all that's true, ma'am, why don't you give a piece of paper to the AJ pointing out particularly those hours that were expended and putting an affidavit associated with it saying these were the really valuable hours?
We attached the letters, Your Honor.
A letter.
We attached as exhibits to the fee petition the letters that we prepared prior to the removal. We spent tremendous amount of hours trying to convince the agency not to remove this employee, to avoid the litigation, and to,
no, I understand that those
to
letters,
tell them they weren't.
Who knows whether those letters, like your pretrial submission, took 50 hours or whether it only took, you know, 50 minutes. My point is that it's very easy for someone in your position, especially when you're facing someone who's being critical of your fees, like the agent. You could have filed a request for review with the full board and gone in chapter and verse and laid down every single hour and said, we think it was wrong here to take a percentage cut because we can demonstrate value added with every single one of the 8 hours other than the ones that were thrown out by the judge. I mean, isn't there a little bit of a burden on the private party, on the lawyer, to be able to explain to the judge where the judge is going wrong?
We believe we did.
I
the
mean,
error,
all
see,
he really said to me is that the judge messed up because he didn't take the time to depose you with regard to every single entry.
For this court, we believe what's at issue is he engaged in an error of law in his methodology. And we're requesting that it be remanded for a proper application of Kernbaker.
So why don't we hear from the other side now, and you come back on the rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Anna Crawford, and I represent the appellee of the United States Postal Service in this matter. The sole issue in this case is the method used by the administrative judge to reduce the excessive fees for what he regarded as a routine case. Whether it was arbitrary, capricious, or an abuse of discretion to use the method that he did use. Faced with inadequate documentation of the approximately 4 solid months of claimed billables, the administrative judge met his statutory obligation to reduce the sought fees to a reasonable fee consistent with his experience and understanding of what the case
should cost. Would it be sufficient if I were to say he was the AJ and say, look, I sat here for this case and I've tried 14,000 other cases and it's my view that this should have been, you know, the hours charged sufficiently would have amounted to 60,000 as opposed to 240,000. Is that sufficient?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's ultimately what he concluded with some articulation of his reasons, but yes, I believe that that is appropriate.
He didn't say that in this case. I didn't see anywhere in Judge Gary's opinion where he said, I've tried several of these cases and basically the 60 grand or so is about what it should have cost.
Well, Your Honor, he does, implied in his decision, he's falling back on his experience with regard to the petition and petition for fees. In particular, he said that the amount of fees, the 4 months, essentially 4 weeks rather, of fees claimed for that particular activity is more than what's normally awarded for a case, the entire case, or the entire NCG.
How do you think that meets the standard in the case law? I mean, is that really a sufficient articulation?
I think he did articulate.
No, I'm asking you hypothetically. If all the judge did was sit back and say, I've looked at the request, and based on my experience, it should have only cost $60,000 to litigate this case.
Well, if those were the facts,
yes, I'm asking hypothetically.
I don't think that that would be a sufficient articulation. If he were simply eyeball the bill and to say, this is excessive, I don't believe that that would meet the standard in the case law, but I don't believe that that's this case.
How do we know where the judge came up with the two-thirds amount? Two-thirds versus three-fourths versus 55%? Is there any articulation by him of two-thirds, 66%?
Well, he only applied that, I believe, in the stage where there was or the remand had occurred from this court to the board, and really nothing was being done, and I believe that...
And he did it on the attorney fee petition.
Right, and...
Because he says this is particularly egregious.
Right, and
he said, are you kidding me? $40,000 for the attorney fee petition? He said, an ordinary case? Yeah, that's about what you do for an ordinary case.
Right. Where he came up with the two-thirds, I don't know, but I believe he's bringing it in line with what he understands to be the run of cases that come before him and his experience with the board.
In terms of a basic amount, I mean, it's not, his analysis could have been, well, they asked for $45. And based on my experience, I only think it takes 16 hours. And therefore, I'm walking them down through whatever the amount is for 16 hours. But rather than do that, he came up with two-thirds, which is, do you think that references to two-thirds of the time spent was excessive? Do you think the two-thirds relates to the amount of time?
Well, I think it's simply the method that, yes, I do, and I think he selected that particular method to bring it down to more like, I believe it was 40 hours of time, which again, I suppose he could have said, it should have taken 40 hours of time, that's what I'm going to give you, but instead he used a two-third multiplier to bring it down to 40, but why he used that method versus the other method, I don't know. But I should point out that that method is adopted by other courts, including this court in the Saxton case, which is, of course, a different case, not an MSPB case. But this court has deferred to the judgment of AJs who have applied their experience to bring the fees in line with what the case should have cost.
If we remanded the case and Judge Garrity simply took the categories, three or four categories that he put the fees into, and for example, on the 50% cut, he simply went through and picked out enough hour, total of the hours, and so the hour for 240, so he picks 120 hours out and says, I'll throw those out. Pay does the same to the other categories. Then presumably there would be no basis for Ms. Marsh to complain, the hours would have been identified, right?
That is another method, although I assume that Ms. Marsh would have complained because the judge in this case did not go through a line-by-line deduction through all of the cases.
But without having sat down with Ms. Marsh and gone through her hour by hour and getting her sworn testimony as to the hours, it would be wildly serendipitous and arbitrary and capricious simply to pick one of two discovery hours and throw it out.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because you're conceding that 1 hour was a good hour.
Right, Your Honor, that's our argument, is that how could he have decided that on August 12th, for example, the 5 hours for hearing preparation would be allowable versus the days spent a week later under the category of continued hearing preparation for the lumped together with telephone calls, reviews of documents, preparing correspondence that we don't know what correspondence is being drafted. It would have been arbitrary for the judge to try to assume how much time in that multiple listing was used on hearing preparation, and to have tried to, on a line-by-line basis, eliminate the hours that Attorney March feels he should have.
Well, I was wondering whether when we're talking about identifying the hours in Krumbaker, we don't say specifically you identify the hour from a particular bill and the description of the time of that hour, which you identify, and the chunk of time you're going to throw away, and you're certainly doing that indirectly when you sound throwing half the hours out. You're indirectly identifying the hours that are being thrown out. It's half of them. But you simply haven't specified which one. Wouldn't you argue that sort of a percentage cut, provided that you have the reasons that were stated here in this case, satisfies permanent?
Yes.
Satisfies its identity.
So long as, yes, he articulates his reasons and the documentation is adequate. That's the difference between this case and Krumbaker, is that the documentation in Krumbaker was not adequate. There was no claim by the government that it was inadequate. Also, there was no claim of excessive fees in that case, and there certainly is here. So.
The board certainly has allowed percentage reductions in the past. There's my little research over the weekend on several cases in which when the case has been presented to the full board on a challenge from the AJ's decision, the full board has accepted a percentage cut.
That's correct.
And other courts in other jurisdictions in other settings,
that's
including this court in the Axiom setting.
That's correct. In the Saxton case, and also this court in Krumbaker cited a case out of the First Circuit, Gabriel versus. Well, the Gabriel case, Gabriel versus Southworth case, which was a just Title VII case where the trial judge reduced the fees by one half, used that percentage. In the Saxton case, this court cited also to another case, the Coulter case, where similarly the Sixth Circuit employed, the trial court in that case applied a percentage reduction. It's something that's not uncommon, and it's appropriate in a case like this where the bill does not lend itself to a more closer pruning of the hours based on the way it's prepared and based on the way it's written. In this particular instance, it's incumbent upon the plaintiff or the moving party seeking the fees to establish the reasonableness of their fee, to adequately document their fee so that the reviewing court can identify the hours spent, and to use billing judgment to reduce the excessive fee, the excessiveness in the bill. Here, the documentation was inadequate, as I said. The judge was faced with hundreds of entries without adequate justification for what time was spent on which activity. I believe the trial court judge or the administrative judge pointed out that something like 90 hours was spent on various telephone calls and communications and conferences in the initial phase of the proceeding, which culminated in a one-day hearing. 50 hours, as Your Honor pointed out, was spent in discovery. All that happened in discovery was one set of written discovery exchanged by both parties, depositions amounting to 2 hours apiece, and as we said, the case culminated in a one-day hearing with five witnesses.
I presume that there's a fine line here, too, that the more depth you go into it in questioning these records, the closer you get to the attorney-client privilege line.
That could be.
How deeply are you allowed to go even as an administrative judge?
Well, the judge has to make the role under the statute, the statutory obligation to award a reasonable fee, and so he's going to have to make some judgment based on the bill and to understand what the bill billing was for. So it's incumbent upon Ms. Marsh to explain to the judge what she's seeking and why and what the hours were spent on and so forth.
By asserting, though, in a fee request that a particular hour charged is was reasonable and necessary for the advice, it would be the attorney waiving the privilege?
The attorney might be.
If somebody's fair to say, well, look, I'll be happy to let the government pay you for that hour if that's really what you did.
Would the judge be able to
say,
I'm just
reiterating what the presiding judge's concern, as I understood it, was that the degree of specificity that Ms. March is suggesting is required in every case certainly states awfully close, sails close to the wind in terms of the way of the privilege.
Well,
in some, with regard to some of those billings. That would be the case. So, as I said, there are multiple listings in which the various activities are lumped together. There are multiple very general descriptions, for example, 5 hours spent on hearing preparation the next day, 5 hours spent on continued hearing preparation, multiple hours, which are not otherwise, it's not otherwise multiple entries, it was not really very clear what it is that's being charged. The judge did the best he could, applying his experience in these matters. He made a line-by-line review. We know that he eliminated numerous items because they were irrelevant or not properly charged to the government. He researched, obviously, board precedent, compared this case to the Ginsburg case, which was a board case, and found that using the indicia from that case, this case was a routine and non-complex case. And that particular finding has not been challenged by counsel. He articulated his reasons in a way so as to permit appellate review. And as I believe Your Honor asked earlier, it's not clear what method counsel believes the judge should have used other than the one that he did use. Counsel's approach would require many assumptions on the part of the judge as far as if he were to go back and do a line-by-line review or cutting of the hours. And it's the position of the Postal Service that the court should defer to the board's judgment and experience in awarding the generous amount that it did award in this case. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you. Ms. March, let me just go back to the question I was asked when we first started about the difference between the fees, $150,000, and what we were awarded. You say he's no longer on the hook for the difference.
Correct, Your Honor.
The overall fee in the beginning was in the neighborhood of $250,000.
Correct.
Is he on the hook or for that? Or
he is not, Your Honor.
Has he paid that?
He is not, Your Honor.
No. Okay.
I'd first like to note that despite the agency's allegations that the fee could not be deciphered, it was inscrutable, the judge, in his decision, did not have a single word of criticism or complaint about the actual bill or the entries. The discovery that was undertaken in this case was exhaustive, in part because I in particular viewed the injustice that was done to this particular individual to be extremely egregious. It was an act, it's in your position and the cases you deal with, whether it's a patent infringement that you just heard, when you deal with federal employment and the loss of federal employment in this particular case, it was meant the difference between somebody supporting his family and not supporting his family. In this particular case, it was an individual with learning disabilities and mental disabilities. He went from support having a home to not having a home, having medical insurance to not having medical insurance, to supporting his children to not supporting his children, to having a future and not having his income. We put time into the case because he went from $55,000 to earning less than $20,000.
Is he currently employed?
He is restored to his employment.
He's still employed.
He is. He would not have a future that he could support his family. So we put everything into this case because he could not duplicate his income with his background. There were five depositions. There was exhaustive discovery. There were motions. Some of it initiated by the Postal Service. We engaged in tremendous effort to dissuade the Postal Service from going down this route, told them they would not prevail, and to try to forestall the litigation that happened. I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.